Welcome to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Jason Smith.
And I'm Catherine Loper. Throughout our lives, we're constantly planning for the future. But what happens when we get there? You have your retirement funds, you have some close relatives and family, and you have an idea of where you want to live. But then what? The transitions we experience after retirement can be some of the most complicated.
Thankfully, our next guest is here to help. Carol Levine is director of the Families and Healthcare Project at the United Hospital Fund and author of the book Navigating Your Later Years for Dummies from AARP. She spoke with us about this transition, myths and all. Carol, thank you for your time today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, if you think back far enough, we can all probably pick out transitions in our lives, kind of like when you're going from high school to college or transitioning to another career. But transitions that we experience as we get older can sometimes be less clear cut because they're often very complex. Can you tell me what makes a transition like this so complex?
Well, there are so many transitions when you get older, and I am in that category, so I know a little bit about it personally as well as professionally. But often they are occasioned by a change in your health status, by a change in your ability to live on your own, or by some other event. They're not always things that you choose to do on your own. They can be, for instance, moving to a different location. Some of those things are seen as good things, but a lot of them are not. So it's a kind of emotional transition as well as a practical transition.
And on the website for the United Hospital Fund, it mentions how many of these transitions as we age, especially when it comes to healthcare, they can often be rushed and result in a lot of confusion and mistakes. How can an older person make these transitions less hectic and smoother for everybody that's involved?
Well, I think the main thing to do is to anticipate to the best you can something that might happen or that you know will happen, and to involve other people in thinking about that transition. Most often it's members of your family, but it could be your physician or a trusted friend or religious leader, as long as there's someone to talk to about it and to weigh the pros and the cons.
And what are some of the more common mistakes that people might make in this period of transition, whether they're making that transition or even just starting to think about it?
Well, I think the most common is to think that, well, if you have to go to the hospital, and, you know, could be for something that is an improvement, like a hip replacement or a knee replacement, well, I'll go home and I'll be just as good as new. But no, the transition is not just going out the hospital door. It is a longer period that you have to adjust to some of the limitations that the treatment may have created. And so anticipating not just the hospital stay and the actual transition in a physical sense, but what you're going to need at home for however long. A lot of people don't want to face that. And I can understand it. It's, you know, you go through something painful and difficult and say, okay, it's over. But frankly, it isn't over.
When do you recommend people have that talk with their family about these decisions? I would imagine the earlier the better.
Oh, the earlier the better, but often it's the family member who brings these questions up. And the older person may say, oh, you know, it's not time to talk about it, or I don't want to talk about it, or I know you'll be there, I know you'll take care of me, let's go on to something else. So it's a question of when is it right for both people to have not a in-depth, this is what we would do in every single instance, but let's talk about what might happen and what we need to do to plan ahead. And once you start the planning, it's a little easier to go on to the next step, trying to do it all at once, which sometimes is a necessity, but it shouldn't be. It should be something that emerges more naturally from the situation you're in and the outcome you expect. I think having family caregivers and on the same page is really important. Often they're not. Often there's a disconnect between the older person who says, well, I'll be able to take care of myself, I won't need help. And the family member says, oh, yes, you will. And there's that kind of arguing about that, which isn't the main point. It's how do we get through this?
And there are options for older people when it's time to make that transition into needing additional care. They could move in with family members. They could move into a smaller house or an apartment or even into a nursing home after retiring in order to make ends meet. Are there benefits and drawbacks to each of those options?
Absolutely. I think a lot depends on your physical condition, certainly your financial condition, and what you are like as a person. One of the chapters in my new book is just about doing a personal inventory. What's your health status like? What's it likely to be? What's your financial status? And not just how much money or assets you have, but how do you think about money? Are you a saver? Are you a spender? Does it bother you to spend money on yourself or see someone spend money on you? Do you get along in groups or are you pretty much a loner? Understanding yourself at this age is really important because it can help you through the choice of options. People who have always been part of groups, whether they're church or social groups or sport groups, are often more comfortable in assisted living because there are a lot of people. People who really want to be by themselves, maybe not so much. Maybe they would be better off nearby their family members, but maybe not living in the same household. So there's no clear-cut answer. It really is a choice that you and your family have to make together.
From the other side, what can a family member expect when it comes to taking care of their aging relative, whether they are taking them into their own home or having them go to an assisted care facility?
What you can expect is a lot of work, rewards to some degree, gratitude maybe, but not a lot of help. There is an ingrained attitude in American society that, you know, we take care of our own. It's a family's problem, not ours. And although there are services and there are programs available for family caregivers, sometimes the daughter, the son-in-law don't even recognize themselves as family caregivers, even though it's so common that, frankly, I don't go anywhere where somebody is not telling me their story. I think there's an adjustment to which you have to get used to the idea that this is a responsibility, that you need to find the sources of help that are available. You need to call on other members of your family. You need to be very upfront about money, which many families have not been to that point. And you need to find time for yourself. This is my main mantra these days, is don't lose your identity by becoming overwhelmed by caregiving. It is part of your life. It is part of your responsibility, but it's not the only thing. And I find many caregivers have that problem.
Now, in your book, which is called Navigating Your Later Years for Dummies, you dedicate one of the last chapters to 10 myths about aging and future care, including inevitable injuries, health problems, family troubles. Which of those myths do you think are the most common or dangerous?
I think the one that says long-term care means nursing home. Is there one that says that? It should. I don't have it in front of me. Most people, when they hear long-term care, they think nursing home. Well, that's part of it, and it may be, but it's not the only part of it. And the other one is that, and this is very pervasive, hospice is just a place where you go to die. There are two problems with that. One is that hospice is not just a place, it may be, but most hospice services are provided at home. So this is not sending people away. And where you go to die, yes, in a Medicare benefit, it's for people with 6 months to live. But my own mother was in hospice for over a year, and her benefits were extended after the hospice nurse and others reviewed the case and saw that she was declining, but not in that precipitous way that might have been had she not had hospice. So I think more often now we're thinking of hospice and palliative care as linked, as palliative care includes, at the end, hospice services, but it also can include medications that are designed to stem the course of the disease. So it's really providing the whole range of comfort as well as treatment.
Now, when a person turns 65, they become eligible for Medicare. So they'll go from whatever their previous medical insurance was to this huge government-run insurance program. And a senior may have been on an Affordable Care Act-based insurance plan or an employer-based plan or on Medicaid before turning 65. So how complicated is the transition from whatever insurance they may have been on before turning 65 into going into Medicare?
It can be very complicated. You can keep your employer-based insurance and transition to Medicare when you leave your employment, assuming that your employer will agree to that. You can keep your Medicaid and add Medicare. That's called dual enrollment. You have to find out what's required for that. There are so many choices to make that I think most people would do well to get an experienced counselor to help them walk through the choices. I mean, the choices are original Medicare, which is the government-sponsored plan, which has three parts, Part A for hospital, Part B for doctor bills, and Part D, optional, for prescription drugs. There's also Medicare Advantage, which some people call Part C, but it's basically all of those rolled in together with perhaps some other options. So your first choice is, you know, which way are you going to go? And that depends on a lot of things, including what Medicare Advantage plans are available, what doctors are in them. They may have more narrow networks than original Medicare. So once you've made that choice, then you have to pick the Part D plan for prescription drugs. And that depends on which prescription drugs you are taking. So it's very complicated, and money obviously matters. So some choices are cheaper than others, but often the cheaper choices don't cover all of the possibilities. So every state actually has a state insurance counseling service, and there are counselors there. It's free service, and they will help you walk through the possible choices. So it's not a decision you make quickly, or your neighbor says, oh, I'm in this. This is great. You have to look at your own situation.
And a senior could reasonably worry that the doctor that they have and have been seeing for years might not be covered by Medicare once they make that transition. So what should somebody know about doctor selection before picking a Medicare plan?
Well, I think the thing to do is to ask your doctor, especially if it's been somebody you've been with for a while, do you take original Medicare? Are you in a Medicare Advantage plan? And if they say no to both, then you probably have to find a new doctor. But most doctors do take original Medicare. Often the networks change, and it's not always easy to find out exactly who is taking what. But the best way is for immediate information is to ask the doctor or the doctor's office. I think that's the best way to start out.
When's the best time to apply for Medicare? Let's say I'm 64, about to turn 65. Is there a benefit to waiting to sign up, or should you try to sign up as early as possible?
If you're employed, have good employer-based insurance, and want to keep it, and that it depends again on the employer-based network and how much it costs, then there's no advantage to signing up early. If you're planning on leaving your employment insurance, then yes, there is an open enrollment period every year, which is from the middle of October to the beginning of December, and I would say start early. You can still apply at a later point, especially if you've been employed, because if you've been employed and had insurance, there are special rules about when you can apply.
What's the most common misconception or maybe mistake that you've seen when it comes to transitioning to Medicare?
I think that most people assume that Medicare pays for home health care, which it does, but only in very specific circumstances. So if you've been in the hospital for, you know, some few days and you are eligible for a limited series of home health care visits, maybe two or three visits by a nurse, maybe a few hours every other day by a home care aide, that's your benefit. So it's not going to be there 24 hours a day. It's not going to be there 12 hours a day. And it's not going to be there for 6 months. So understanding the limits of Medicare home health care is really important because that's the point at which you're going to need the most help, usually. If you've been in the hospital, you've been sick. You don't get in the hospital unless you're pretty sick or you've had a surgery. The other big misconception is that Medicare pays for long-term care, and by that most people think of as nursing home care. Medicare does not pay for long-term care. It pays for a short-term care in a nursing facility for rehab or other kinds of skilled treatment. But again, it's short-term, and it's not going to take the place of home care or nursing home care. So different words have different meanings. Medicaid, the insurance that covers poor people or people on low income, does provide for, in some cases, does provide for more home health care and certainly pays for nursing home care, again, if you're eligible. So there's a lot of ifs, and that's why you really need some guidance, because you may think you're eligible and the person who is doing the intake says, no, you're not really eligible. You want to pay privately? Okay, we'll take you. Most people just do not have the resources to pay privately.
Well, Carol, thank you very much for your time today.
You're welcome.